This is Brian Cambria with regional news for the Western Slope, Friday, December 27th, 2013. The new Montrose County attorney has officially come on board. The Watch reports that following the resignation of Robert Hill earlier this year, Teresa Williams was hired by the Montrose Board of County Commissioners. Most recently, Williams served as city attorney in Lee Summit, Missouri. She now has a 3-year contract to serve as Montrose County's staff attorney. Williams, who has spent her career practicing law in-house for municipalities, counties, and cities, grew up in Texas and attended the University of Texas Law School. She's previously lived and practiced law in Texas, Alaska, Missouri, and Colorado. She takes over duties from acting interim county attorney Carolyn Clausen, who will resume her role as assistant county attorney. County commissioners indicated that Williams' experience made her the outstanding applicant. In a press release, Commissioner David White said, quote, "Williams has extensive experience in municipal law as an in-house counsel for both cities and counties, with a particular expertise in land use, labor issues, property transactions, economic development, taxes, and administrative law. We are pleased to welcome her aboard." Many of the conditions associated with the passage of Amendment 64 legalizing marijuana in Colorado are set to become effective January 1st. Since one of those conditions allows municipalities to prohibit the sale of marijuana, many who wish to partake may take advantage of another of Amendment 64's conditions. Even in jurisdictions that don't allow retail marijuana shops, it's legal to grow your own on your own property. But as the Denver Post reports, that may be easier said than done. Amendment 64 allows home cultivation of up to 6 plants per adult. Under the law, growing your own marijuana requires keeping your plants in an enclosed, locked space that is not open or public. That's pretty broadly written, but according to the Post, a safe interpretation would mean a basement room or closet that can be locked. And no more than 3 of your plants can be in the flowering stage at one time, and it remains illegal to sell what you grow. Previously, for home growers, there has been the problem of where to acquire seeds or cuttings. Unless they received it as a gift, they couldn't obtain cannabis plant material without risking a step on the wrong side of the law. Beginning on January 1st, retail marijuana shops will open and can legally sell plants and seed. But it's not like home growers can call a Colorado State University Extension agent for growing advice. Those experts are prohibited from answering any questions related to marijuana. Even though Amendment 64 specifically allows advice on growing marijuana, greenhouse and nursery staff often shy away from the subject as well. The full article in the Post gives more specific details about how to safely and legally enjoy your very own homegrown. The mysterious illness striking bald eagles in Utah continues to claim birds. 16 bald eagles have died in northern Utah so far, and 4 more are being treated. The Salt Lake Tribune reports the latest birds showed up on Christmas Eve near a West Point, Utah home, displaying head tremors, lower extremity paralysis, and digestive issues. 6 bald eagles turned into wildlife centers this month have either died or were euthanized. Necropsy test results from the National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, Wisconsin, are expected next week after being delayed by the holidays. Meanwhile, the staff at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in northern Utah continues to adapt treatments for the eagles, hoping to come up with a way to save them. One of the most obvious symptoms is head tremors, likely caused by a swelling of the brain, which is also a sign of West Nile virus. But officials are not sure it's West Nile and will wait for lab results before stating the cause of deaths. Wildlife officials caution people who spot distressed eagles not to handle them, as since it is unknown what's causing the illness, it is unknown if it is transmittable to humans. Instead, the public is urged to contact Utah Division of Wildlife Resources with the location. Modern times and needs have complicated how some Native American communities interact with the environment. KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers recently participated in a flight across America where she spoke with some members of the Navajo Nation and their advocates about how some American Indian tribes are reacting to conservation efforts.
American Indian culture is often associated with respect for the environment. However, as some of these communities fight unemployment and prevailing racism, that relationship to the natural world has changed and continues to evolve. EcoFlight, a nonprofit based in Aspen, Colorado, flies Navajo students from Farmington, New Mexico, over nearby mines and coal plants, and that aerial perspective has a lingering effect on students like Ryan.
You see more things in the air, like you see what's all around the plants.
Mm-hmm.
When you're like at the ground level, you can't really see much.
The Navajo students say they're worried about how pollution has and continues to harm the health of the community. However, they also understand that those mines fill a vital need for their people. Leo, a junior at Red Valley Cove High School in Farmington, New Mexico, explains how mining in their area presents a two-sided equation.
Like, on one side, if we do the mining, it kind of helps our economy as a nation. It kind of, on the other hand, though, it's more polluted. Kind of like you put the people at risk. So it's kind of two parts of it.
Dependence on the mining industry for jobs and funds has brought about an almost finalized plan for the Navajo tribe to purchase BHP Billiton LTD's Navajo coal mine southwest of Farmington, New Mexico. It's believed that before the mine's mandatory decommission in 2016, the mine will generate $40 million in revenue for the Navajo Nation and will save 430 jobs. However, the students still relate the deal to boarding a sinking ship, and young Navajo like Leo will willingly tell you that monetary needs complicate ethical choices concerning mining and land conservation.
But then once like they show like talk about money towards the Navajos, and once like they fall in, and they just forget about all the what they just said about like land, how like sacred it is.
But these Navajo students are not only tied to mining by funds and jobs. Mining is also a major part of their history. That's apparent through their pride in their school mascot, the Miners. The students say they are all too aware of the health risks and environmental damage caused by the mining industry. They claim they want their lands protected, even though Richard Nixon designated their home as a sacrificial zone to mining 40 years ago. They say if they are ever going to break their mining ties and save their lands, they will need to work together and regain a voice of power. And that's exactly what's happening in a groundbreaking act of land conservation in Utah. The Navajo tribe is working in conjunction with Utah government to protect 11.9 million acres within San Juan County. Beginning 3 years ago, the Navajo Nation and the San Juan County Commission began working in conjunction to undertake a joint land planning process.
You can kind of see here are some fishing and game areas, ceremonial sites, types of things. These are all the areas. The long lines are where wildlife move through, and then these darker areas are where the Navajo, the important areas to the Navajo. And that's how this whole area was determined.
Matthew Sheldon of the Conservation Lands Foundation has worked with the Navajo Nation throughout the proposal's inception and explains how the Navajo Dene Bekea National Conservation Area is being mapped.
The way that their proposal came about is over this three-year period, they have done extensive interviews with elders of the tribe to figure out, you know, historically what parts of this area that are known as Cedar Mesa and the surrounding areas were used by the Navajo tribe. What areas are culturally significant to us? What areas are significant to us in terms of everyday use?
Utah Congressman Rob Bishop and Utah Senator Bob Bennett are spearheading this unprecedented push to include tribal elders in official land conservation discussions. Word of the government requested Dene Bekea National Conservation Area is spreading through the conservation community. And although meetings between tribal members and government legislators can get tense, exposing some lingering racial tension, some Utah park rangers are saying it's about time that the voices of the tribes are heard in official land conservation proceedings. This is head interpretive ranger Todd Overby from Hovenweep National Monument, just inside the Utah border.
In the past, it was just more of like a, you know, yeah, we'll invite them and they can just be there. You know, we don't really care, you know, but now there is that sense of respect, that sense of understanding that they, what their feelings are and what their thoughts are is real important.
On August 9th, the Navajo Nation submitted their proposal for the Dean Bekea National Conservation Area. Now they can only await Utah government approval. Things are changing regarding American Indians' involvement in major land conservation issues. Some states are looking to tribal leaders for information about the land they have known and inhabited for centuries. And American Indians, particularly the youth, are looking toward renewables and conservation to free their communities from mining and development that continues to damage the health of their land and their people. For KGNU, I'm Hanalee Myers.
That concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.